It's 12-12-18. Didn't piss off the Euros because it's 12-12 no matter which way you prefer the day and the
Their
month.
Their opinion doesn't matter.
Sorry, Euros.
But we are closing in on the midpoint of December. Those of you who are Christmas-oriented, pro Aspie tip, now's the time to order things.
Because otherwise it's probably not going to get there.
Because I know you're not going to go to a store, right?
Yeah.
Man, I've been going to the store a lot recently because of the new house, and it is just infuriating. I can't stand those crowds. It's insane. I still don't understand where those people are the other 11 months of the year.
The really frustrating thing is that you go to the store, and most of the stuff the store has is crap, and you can get better stuff online. And it's like, why is it always that there's better stuff online than there is in the store?
Well, I'm buying stuff like shower curtains and know, things like that. And it's just like, you don't think of it. I never realized I needed all that crap until I'm like, oh, wait, I don't have this thing at this house yet. Better go get it. So
ThinkGeek sells shower curtains. As does Amazon.
Those are hideously overpriced. You're insane. Actually, I got to remember to take my sheets are downstairs. I got to get those. So maybe, I don't know if the biggest news this week, but the big hardware news is the AMD leak. But I'm going to tell you, these prices, no way. No way these are the prices.
It's insane. So Forbes has the article. I think Adored TV on YouTube was the original source of information. There's a credible leak out there. And Jim did some pretty good analysis and that kind of thing on if it's true. But the Forbes headline is huge leaks reveal AMD's Ryzen 3000 series up to 16 cores and 5.1 gigahertz frequencies. This generation of CPUs from AMD would seem to fully embrace the whole like chiplet microarchitecture, meaning some of the chip is fabricated on 7 nanometer for the things that 7 nanometer does best. And some of the things on the chip are fabricated using older processes, things like memory I.O. and Infinity Fabric I.O. and peripheral I.O., that sort of thing, on an older process. So if you look at the prices here, we're going to see 8 cores on AM4 and just all sorts of crazy, crazy stuff. I'm optimistic, but let's not forget how optimistic everybody was with the whole, Vega thing.
Well, speaking of Vega, even more unrealistic are the leaked video cards. Because we're talking about a $250 GPU that's going to be on par with the 1080 GTX.
Yeah.
That's no.
It does seem unlikely, but I would say that it depends on when it's going to come out. So if AMD is targeting $250 for the 2070 after the 2070 has already been on the market for a year, around $300 is not completely insane.
Well, it also depends on, I think, how much of that inventory NVIDIA gets through.
Yeah.
Because until they get through that, of course, if this does come out and it really is these prices, that is such bad news. How puckered do you think the anuses at NVIDIA are this week?
I don't think that they've got such market share that I don't think that they're really even that worried about it.
I don't know. I mean, I think this could definitely push somebody to AMD. I mean, 250.
Yeah. I mean, for 2070 levels of performance, I mean, that is pretty nuts. And it remains to be seen what they're going to do with the whole ray tracing thing. But the ray tracing thing is honestly not as revolutionary as it was when, like, the Voodoo 2 came onto the market or whenever. I mean, remember, like, going from, like, a regular graphics card to the Voodoo, and it was like, wow, I'm willing to pay a premium for this. Yeah, good Lord.
That was Quake, and it was just like, what's going on here? But ray tracing, I don't think there's been a killer game.
No.
A killer app for ray tracing.
Battlefield?
Doesn't exist yet. Yeah. And people, like those kind of FPS type situations, people are going to turn that off if they're serious about the game.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's going to be a selling point. So if AMD, even if they're not doing ray tracing on the level of the RTX stuff, for $250?
Yeah, that's a good deal.
People are going to take it. It's too good to be true. Wait and see.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of things that may be too good to be true, how about the Intel's lithography? Now, they claim... 7 nanometer, okay, 10 nanometer is a disaster, right? It is a dumpster fire. But 7 nanometer is apparently a beautiful sports car sitting next to the dumpster that's perfectly fine.
So Enintech has the article here. The Intel EUV-enabled 7 nanometer process tech is on track. And so this article details some of the differences between Intel's 10-nanometer process and Intel's 7-nanometer process. And one of the differences is the wavelength of light used for the process. And there's a whole bunch of other technical details. They say that the 10-nanometer process is actually going to be simpler for a lot of reasons than the 10-nanometer process. So the 7-nanometer process is going to be simpler from a manufacturing standpoint than the 10-nanometer process. And I no longer trust Intel because they have said some very misleading things about the 10-nanometer process and like where exactly it is in the pipeline. And so here they show up and they say, look, the people working on 7-nanometer, it was a completely different team. They were working out of a completely different building. And yeah, those 10-nanometer bozos were just, I mean, they stopped short of literally saying that, you know, the 10-nanometer people were just going to throw them directly under the bus and tell the bus driver to step on the gas. But the 7-nanometer people are our heroes. But then it sort of go on to say, well, 7-nanometer is probably not going to be out for about 4 years.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. It's on track, quote unquote, but the track has a long way to go. So, I mean, if you're, you know, what are the odds that most of the people in the upper brass just be gone in 4 years? It's easy. It's like being a politician. You can promise stuff now and let it be the next person's problem. Well, we've talked a lot about Comcast and their hidden fees. We talked about their hidden fees last week. We talked about many of the cable companies just straight up lying to you in their advertisements. You know, $19.99 is not $19.99 ever when it comes to internet and cable service. AT&T traditionally has maybe been a little bit better, but things might be changing.
Gizmodo has the headline, AT&T will now keep your money if you cancel TV or internet in the middle of a billing cycle. So if you know, it used to be the case that if you set up your service to cancel on the 15th of the month, you would only be billed for 15 days of service. They call that prorating. And I did a little bit of research. I tried to find it. I think this stems from some court cases in the 60s because AT&T was doing a lot of stuff like this. And some of these practices led to the breakup in the 80s, the monopoly breakup, in which they promised not to do things like that or to have prorating. And I tried to find the details about if this is by law or if this is something they agreed to. And I think it was just something they agreed to do to try to keep the regulators off their back, that now they're just saying, you know, it's been long enough.
Now, that article says it's actually going to, like, it's not just middle, it's day two.
Yeah.
If you cancel day two, that's you. Now, of course, you keep the service. So you get to continue using your service for that month, but you will never get money back. And if you're canceling, you're usually canceling because you're moving or you don't have the equipment anymore or something like that. So what good is the service?
Well, it's inconvenient though, because like if you are moving over the course of a month, it's like I'm starting the move on the 1st, but I will be sleeping at the new place after the 15th. You could schedule it perfectly and to save a little money. I mean, $200, $300 for the communications bill is not atypical for an American per month. And so going from, you know, 200 to 400, 300 to 600 for the overlapping service, that's a lot that most people can't afford.
Now, you can switch your service if you were going to keep it. You can also transition that money to another AT&T service, but you just can't get it back for any reason.
Yeah, or switch providers or something like that.
Well, Apple, we haven't talked about an Apple failure for a little while, have we?
We talked about the butterfly switch failure.
That's been a couple months ago, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So we're definitely due for one, and here we go. And this really isn't new news. This is just a new lawsuit.
9to5Mac has the headline, class action suit alleges iMac and MacBook lack dust filters causing display and performance problems. So I think that the peasant class is starting to realize that maybe the emperor is naked.
Yeah. I also wonder, though, like, is this a really widespread problem, or is this somebody who's belt sanding next to their...
No, it's definitely a really widespread problem. The new iMacs that have a built-in Vega graphics card, Louis Rossman has some teardown videos on those, and those are, you know, just from daily use, they accumulate dust like crazy, just in a normal household.
I think this is specifically about the monitors, where the dust will literally get into the display.
And yeah, there's nothing you can do.
And yeah, it's just, you know, it's not a dead pixel. It's just your dead flesh.
Yeah.
That's blocking.
Now, so. It used to be on the old 27-inch IMAX, they actually had a little layer of rubber around the screen, and the glass was held on magnetically. So if you wanted to, you could just pop the glass off and clean it and put it back, and it wasn't really a big deal.
That sounds like the antithesis of an Apple design. You mean it wasn't super glued or, you know, welded? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. They, if you're one of these people, they are seeking more participants for the class action suit. So,
if you've had butterfly switch failures, I mean, that was just kind of the last straw because, you know, you get the... I know somebody that has a MacBook Pro that's barely a year old, and whenever they start doing any kind of light duty, it sounds like there's a Dremel tool going off because it's that... It's just really struggling, and it's because he has cats.
You got to think that most hipsters have cats. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
yeah.
a cat lover. Maybe I'll get some cats, but you recognize that Apple people probably have a lot of cats. You would think in the engineering room, they would just have a shelter, you know, just to see how that works out for them. Well, we talked about Facebook and how clandestine you have to be to communicate within Facebook so the, you know, Big Brother doesn't hear what you're up to. And it seems like among the big tech companies, that's not unique.
Business Insider has this. It's like, FU leakers, a former senior Google employee says a frantic quest to stop internal info getting out is now management's number one priority. This is, of course, fallout from the Chinese search engine Dragonfly. The fallout here is that people in Google were working on this, and they want to work on this. They want to work with the Chinese government for business interests or new markets or whatever. But a lot of the employees at Google have a problem with that ethically. And so they want to make sure that the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing so that they can take on those projects without really anybody knowing what's going on or being able to answer an inquest or being arrested in another country full of documents that they maybe shouldn't have had that then turn out to be really embarrassing. Talking about Facebook now.
Yeah, and the Dragonfly thing, we learned last week that the data privacy guy was not invited to Dragonfly meetings.
After raising some objections.
Because they knew that, you know, he might do something crazy. So I was like, just exclude him. And it seems like not only are they doing that, but they're sort of terrorizing the workforce.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, if you leak, we will come after you. The article describes them as being sort of consumed by it. Like, it's the number one priority of all these executives. It's like, forget innovating and all that other stuff. We must destroy the leakers, which is kind of like a, you know, kind of a Moby Dick type situation.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the other bad news for Google is their shadow workforce. Now, we've talked about this in the past. Places like Amazon with their delivery and their warehousing. A lot of companies do this with IT.
Yeah.
You don't actually work for Google or Amazon or HP or whoever. You work for some, you know, ridiculously named company who contracts with these people, and you are not a full citizen.
No. CNBC's article is Google's shadow workforce of contractors demands higher wages, equal benefits, and so on, in a letter to CEO Sundar Pichai. So these are the contractors at Google. There's a term for them, TVCs, I think. And so those are temporary, contracted, or something else type workers.
It's the V is just part of the first one. So it's the temp workers and the contractors. That's who it encompasses.
And the situation at Google is that they're not treated anywhere near the way that real Google employees are, but they're doing enough work that they feel like they should be. Yeah. So
probably true. A lot of, like when you talk about the, you know, the IT people and the delivery people, they're doing the same work. They're just simply not given the same treatment. The one of the big things they talk about, they're not allowed to go to the Friday meetings, which is where they've, you know,
the town hall meetings,
the leaks are coming from. So those are probably related. The big thing here, and it's like, okay, I can kind of understand. You know, it's like, listen, guys, you're not Google employees. You didn't make the cut. We're going to throw you some table scraps. Be happy with what you get. But here's one that they can't explain. Remember the YouTube shooter? They didn't tell these guys about her. The regular employees got a notice. It was like, get out of the building. There's a shooter. These guys were just working away. And Google's response was, oh, we told your employer. So...
That's that a little rough.
That's a little weird. And our next story, this is a little bit of a non-story, but definitely not something that the anti-leakers at Google want to be a headline.
The New York Post has the article, Google employee 22 found dead inside of New York City headquarters. But the headline for us is not the headline, but the fact that this is a headline. I mean, it's unusual for somebody that young to die, and they don't have any kind of history of, according to the thing, they don't have any kind of history of drug abuse or anything like that. They just died. And so it's unusual for somebody to die that young, sure, but just because it happens inside a Google office doesn't mean that it's newsworthy.
Yeah, and the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that headline, that's the reason I included the story before I read it, was like, you know, 100-hour work week, and like those Japanese guys who just die playing World of Warcraft. But there was no mention of that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he was necessarily overworked or worked to death. He just happened to die while he was at the Google office.
And somehow it becomes a story for the New York Post. That doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, it's a catchy... Listen, it got me. It clickbaited me. I was like, oh, well, let's find out about that. Well, there's nothing to find out about. Wow. And the next story, again, we're talking about Apple. Should I put these together?
Also clickbait.
Well, it's true, but is it surprising?
No.
I mean, I think most people who know about technology are pretty aware of this.
Your Apple products are getting more expensive, and here's how they get away with it from the Washington Post. So it talks about how people that want to frequently replace their devices are getting hit the hardest because the devices are actually getting quite a bit more expensive.
But it also points out that Apple does offer lower cost options. You can get the cheaper stuff. But these Apple hipsters, again, they're not buying into technology. They're buying into the brand and the lifestyle. And the lifestyle has been sold to them as have the best stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So they buy the $1,200 iPhone, and they're happy to do it.
Even though it's only marginally better than the $600 iPhone.
And is rising way above the rate of inflation.
Yeah.
You're getting basically the same stuff. Now, Apple will tell you that you're getting all these great new features, so it merits the price. But then they'll sell you a device that has most of those features for $800 or $600.
Yeah.
But people aren't interested. The R version of the iPhone they talked about, that's actually the newest one. But it's not the best one because it's supposed to be a budget version of the iPhone. No one cares.
Yeah.
No one wants it.
Yeah. That's kind of funny. That means the price is going to come down. No, I don't know. That means that they're not going to hit their manufacturing targets and it's going to be Harry Caray at Foxconn.
Mm. Well, speaking of monopolistic juggernauts, let's talk about Steam. But more importantly, a possible competitor to the throne.
Competitor. VentureBeat has the headline, Fortnite dev launches Epic Game Store that takes just 12% of revenue. That's a big deal, because on Steam, it's 30%. And this is going to take just 12%. But if your game uses the Unreal Engine 4, I think, the license terms for that on Steam are that they also get 5% of your Steam revenue. But if you go for the Epic Game Store, it's 12%, not
17%. Yeah, nice. So the other thing is, Steam has just recently changed its pricing, and it tiered based on revenue. So if you sell 10 million, you get a better share. And then if you sell 50 million, you get a better share. And if you sell 100 million, you get a huge, they start taking like 5%, I think. And that, of course, is great to bring in the big names to your, because, you know, we see all these people spinning off their own. They got Blizzard and Activision and who else has got one?
Well, the cost is marginal. Yeah.
Ubisoft has got one.
All of these people have them, and they're all terrible. They're all just garbage.
So Steam is trying to get those people back. It's like, hey, if you're huge, we'll give you these special rates. But if you're a poor indie developer, you're always going to be in 30% land. You know, you're going to sell 10 million worth. So maybe an attractive place to go. Yeah. And a lot of people talk about how you would have to hire someone to do a lot of the stuff that Steam does, like rolling out updates, hosting all that infrastructure. You're getting something for your 30%, but now Epic's going to do it for 12.
I bet that Steam lowers their, if they start to get any traction whatsoever, Epic, then I bet Steam lowers their percentage for indie developers, or they do it where, like, until your first million, the percentage is very low.
Well, Epic, you know, they quoted in the article, I think they're going to lose money on this. And they're okay with that because they were like, you know, we've wanted to do something like this for a long time. It's just not economically feasible. But now there's Fortnite. So we're kind of drowning in cash and we're just doing what we want.
The thing that I like about this kind of thing is that Steam is actually not a terrible platform for what it does. They've done a very good job of balancing the rights of the user with the other stuff. And I think that it's going to be a long time before Epic is able to catch up to Valve with something that is as functional and reliable.
Well, a lot of people are blaming Bethesda, saying, you knew what a garbage Fallout 76 was. And you knew if you put it on Steam, you would lose your shirts to refunds. And that's why you didn't go to Steam.
That's probably true.
And it does point out that Steam kind of goes to bat for the user a little bit, which is nice. Well, if you're in a place where it's convenient, you could walk outside right now and you could look up in the sky and you won't see an army of drones, which is incorrect, according to Jeff Bezos 5 years ago.
Where are the drones? Amazon's customers are still waiting. So this is from the Associated Press, and these guys are like, wait a minute, didn't Jeff Bezos promise us automated delivery drones? Where are our automated delivery drones? And you got to wonder what sort of trauma these guys have been through that they're demanding this.
He did, in fact, say 5 years ago that he thought within 5 years, delivery drones would be totally a thing. Everybody would be enjoying them. And we do not have them. And we have had some deliveries by drone, but
a few human organs, as we learned last week.
Yeah, most people don't have access to it. I think in Japan they use them a lot, but they don't have the airspace rules, I don't think, as much. So maybe some vaporware. I don't know. I think we'll probably get them. I wonder if self-driving cars will further push drones out, because that'll make that industry cheaper and more automated.
Probably. I could see like pizza delivery happening more readily by a self-driving car with a bunch of pizza slots versus drone.
Well, what we probably won't see very much more in the future are gasoline engines, which is tragic. I didn't include the story. I did see Volkswagen. They've planned as far as 2026, as far as gasoline-driven, diesel-driven cars. After that generation, they're not going to do fossil fuel.
Yeah, I saw that. I also saw that Elon Musk tweeted that he's maybe interested in taking over those production factories that GM shut down.
Yeah. So
I wonder if he's just toying with them.
Well, then the Musk tweets are, who knows? Yeah, you take those with a grain of salt. But in a lot of places in the EU, you know, the filthy socialists have decreed you just can't drive gasoline engines in our beautiful cities. So what do? Well, Aston Martin has an interesting answer.
Aston Martin is the luxury car maker. So the Verge headline is that they will make old cars electric so they don't get banned from cities. So your classic car that it would be a crime to do anything that dramatic to. It's like, oh, we're going to sell an electric conversion kit so you can still drive this thing around.
That one is a 76 something or other. And definitely the people who have those are classic. Now, they do say it's going to be what they describe as a cassette, which is sort of like you're just going to pop it in and replace the engine. And if you ever want to, you can go back.
Mm.
I don't understand how that's going to work with like a throttle, though. Because these old cars, I mean, the throttle was literally, you know, controlling the fuel. So you'd have to put some sort of sensor in there.
And drain the gas tank, because you don't want to haul all that gas around for no reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could just run that out. That wouldn't be too bad. But it seems like it would be labor intensive.
Yeah, to switch it.
But reversible, so.
Well, I guess if you're paying for an Aston Martin, you know, $100,000 to swap it between modes, it's not really a big deal.
They did mention that. It's like, you know, these people got a few dollars. But that's got to hurt the classic car trading market, right?
One would think, yeah.
Can't be good for it. Well, another issue that we have, that we will have with self-driving cars, especially if everybody has one and they're low cost, is just because the cars are driving themselves doesn't mean there's less traffic.
Yeah.
And sometimes in a city, something big happens and you have to change the traffic. And it can get really bad for a really long time, which is what they're dealing with in Seattle. UPS has the answer.
They're getting ready to open a tunnel, so UPS is worried. But the headline is UPS tries delivery tricycles as Seattle's traffic doom looms. Now, the Seattle's traffic doom is from, like, they're closing one road to open another road. But for a while, there's not going to be an easy route downtown or something like that. So UPS has these tricycles, but they are electric assist. So,
yeah, so
you can pedal, but there's batteries.
Well, you operate this wheel. And I think these back ones here, you have a lever. So you can apply, I think, like a 12-mile-per-hour assist on those. And, of course, that'll be filled with packages.
350 pounds worth.
The range is not great. It's like 4 to 12 miles or something like that. So, obviously, in the city, I guess it wouldn't be too bad. But, yeah, got your little rain guard. Could get cold in Seattle.
Yeah.
I think they're going to make that change in later December or January or something, right?
So those guys will not be wearing shorts.
Even if you're not wearing shorts, that's going to be a cold little... And it seems like they went sort of like minimalist with the shield. Because what if you're behind a truck and it's throwing, you know, like slush and salt back at you?
Yeah, those don't think that those would be good in the snow.
Guess we'll find out.
Poor UPS.
You know, guys, it's going to snow in Seattle, right?
I mean, yeah, it's got to. How could it not?
Well, we talked about Amazon Go, the store where you just walk in and pick up whatever you want and walk out and it gets charged to your Amazon account. I'm excited about that. We'll never see one in this part of the world. But maybe those of us in rural places can still enjoy them when we travel.
Reuters headline is exclusive. Amazon targets airports for a checkout free store expansion. So these are the cashierless stores. What better place to put them than an airport? There's people there 24/7. They're looking for stuff. It's like, hey, you got an Amazon account? Come right in, take whatever.
Yeah. And if you can pay Amazon prices from the website instead of those ridiculous airport prices, these will be huge.
Yeah.
So look forward to that as you travel. They have sort of talked about Amazon really wants to do this, but apparently it's kind of rough getting real estate inside an airport. Mm. There's like a bidding process or something.
Yeah.
And every time they bid, the airports come back and it's like, oh, we got somebody that beat your bid, but they won't tell them who. So it's like, are you just screwing with us? Don't screw with the Bezos.
I think that probably also means that there's not going to be like 50-cent bottles of water in there. Like you can get on Amazon.com. It's going to be the same old $5.
Well, you can't buy an individual bottle of water on Amazon. So you might be able to get a gallon jug.
Can't get that past security.
Well, we talked about Uber. We haven't talked about Uber a lot lately. The new guy that took over has done a good job of sort of calming things down. But before that happened, we talked about arbitration. If you are unhappy with Uber, just by merit of signing up to the service, and that terms of service that you didn't read, you agreed to arbitration. Mm-hmm. So you can't sue them. But one law firm has found an interesting loophole.
Yeah, so this story is actually really interesting. It's another Reuters article, and it says, forced into arbitration, 12,500 drivers claim Uber won't pay fees to launch their cases. So we covered this originally when it was happening, and the court said, okay, you've got the arbitration agreement, and in the arguments to that court at that time, a long time ago, Uber said, yes, we are going to pay the arbitration firm the fees, which is like $1,500 to start, and that will kick off the arbitration process. Uber has done that 6 times. They've gone to arbitration 6 times so far out of 12,500.
Yeah, so it costs $1,200 to do. So the law firm basically was like, hey, we want to do 9 test cases to set some standards, and we want you to work with us. And Uber was like, no, we're going to do what we want. And they're like, okay, have 12,000 cases that are $1,200 a piece and you have to deal with right now. And their answer was, we're just not going to deal with it. So there is a time limit that I think they've already missed. I don't know what happens there.
Well, they may be able to go back. The law firm that originally argued in court and where the court said, okay, I guess there's an arbitration policy in place, you can go with arbitration. They may be able to get that ruling overturned because judges don't look kindly on that. If you tell a judge, hey, we've got an arbitration process, we're going to follow through with it 100%, and then this happens, if you get the same judge, that judge is going to be pissed off.
And there's probably no limit of Uber drivers who are upset. Yeah. Would be willing to just jump in there. So they could cover that amount of money, you know, even 12,000 cases at $1,200 a pop. Yeah, Uber could eat that cost. What if it just, if it's constant?
Yeah.
That'll destroy them. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they got to do something.
There. Bad news for Uber.
But smart in terms of that law firm.
You know what else is smart? The level one store, because I keep forgetting that we got new stuff in there and we forgot to mention it at the start.
These are some fine looking water bottles. Or let's say that you have to visit your family for the holidays, right? And you don't particularly enjoy that. Maybe some holiday spirits. That is, what are these, like 16, 17 ounces?
Yeah, they're pretty big.
That is a lot of rye whiskey to get you through.
Vacuum insulated, so it'll hold the heat and the cold.
I don't think they...
They don't care.
Those drinks don't necessarily need to be chilled.
Well, you might also need some spirits if you're holding Bitcoin as well.
Yeah. I didn't check the price before we started, but...
it was hovering just over 3,000.
It's really, really just... plummeting.
Bitcoin falls 10% as bad news descends like cockroaches coming out of a hole, according to MarketWatch.
And of course, they're talking about Ether. Most of the coins are just crumbling. And the Bitcoin Cash thing they blamed, I don't think that's it.
No.
I think this is just, you know, panic selling.
If it was Bitcoin Cash would be going up and then Bitcoin would be going down. But everything is going down. Yeah. There's lower trading volume. There's lower everything across the board. It's probably not just one thing. It's probably a combination of things.
Well, I think the euphoria is officially dead.
Yeah.
And probably we're falling below that line. Like there's probably like a $4,000, $5,000 area where it could be stable. Except now the sentiment is so bad.
Yeah. It was stable at 6, and now, so 5 doesn't seem unreasonable.
Some people are saying that this is the end. It's going to go to 0. I don't see it going to 0.
No.
But a lot of people, when they were caught up in the tulip mania that was Bitcoin, made some really, really bad decisions. And one of those individuals is about to suffer for that.
The Bitcoin, this is the Bloomberg article, Bitcoin options bought for $1 million will soon be worthless. So this was somebody who bought options on Bitcoin if Bitcoin was going to go past $50,000 or something like that.
A $50,000 call for December 28th. Hmm. So on December 28th, if Bitcoin doesn't happen to get to $50,000, oh, Boilersnake, he sold early. He sold at like 18,000. He loves to rub our faces. Let me tell you. Every day you walk in here, he's like, "How has that Bitcoin investment going?" And it's insulting, but what can we do? But yeah, this guy, if it doesn't hit $50,000, then that entire $1 million will be gone.
Yeah. So. Oops. Although one of the guys that was interviewed for this article said that they were holding Bitcoin and they sold some of the Bitcoin they were holding and then bought this as... to like hedge their bets. So if it went down a whole bunch, they're covered. And if it went up a whole bunch, they're covered. And so total, the net on that transaction was still profitable for that individual.
But it could have been profitable plus $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this was a lottery ticket. If Bitcoin would have went to $50,000, the amount of options he would have been able to buy at a call that far outside, he would be filthy, filthy rich. So... at least it didn't get burned completely. Whoever sold those contracts is so happy. They're like, oh, look at this idiot. Well, it was a week of record-setting YouTube viewing. And
what not on our channel.
Sadly. What would we... I mean, can you imagine if we got to, what was it, 264 million
there would views? Be so... The comments would be so toxic as to be unmanageable. But Variety is talking about the Avengers Endgame trailer smashes a 24-hour video views record. So this is the trailer for the new Avengers movie. The Avengers Endgame is the name of the movie. It's a movie trailer. 200 and some million views.
60-something.
In 24 hours.
I haven't watched it. Did you watch it?
I did.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. But I think we all kind of know how that story's going to end, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one way it can go.
Pretty much.
But those movies aren't terrible. You know, I can't really hate on those. They're predictable, but they're fun.
When we look at the, you know, David Banner, Lou Ferrigno, Hulk series of the 70s and like the old Batman series, while they have a certain charm, These are actually pretty well done for the most part.
Yeah. Superhero stuff is done well when they spend a lot of money on it and take it seriously. I think actually one of the drawbacks to these movies is the comedy they try to mix in.
Yeah.
Because it's not that great. Although the Australian rock monster guy was pretty funny. But for the most part, the comedy isn't great. I get they're trying to appeal to children.
Yeah.
But when they take it less seriously, I think it detracts from it a little bit.
I think there's also not as much time for character development in the movies. I find that if I were relying strictly on knowledge of the characters from the movie, I would probably find them a lot more hollow and vapid than they otherwise are.
You got how many superheroes?
Yeah.
There's just too many of them.
There's just not enough time.
So, I don't know. But I'm sure it'll be a big hit. It'll sell quite a few movie tickets. I won't be one of them. Can you imagine? When does that come out?
Sometime in 2019.
It's not a Christmas movie then?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well. So speaking of YouTube views and our lack of them, at least we're not losing to a 7-year-old. Oh, wait.
YouTube's top earner is a 7-year-old who made $22 million playing with toys. So this is Ryan's Toy Reviews. Toys Review. There you go.
There he is. Apparently, he just gets toys and puts them together and checks them out, and people love it. Here he is in a giant inflatable water park thing. I mean, that's a charmed life.
It is fun to watch a kid enjoy stuff, but I worry that when he grows up, he's never going to be able to achieve that level of happiness.
Dude, there is so much methamphetamine in that future. Do you think the parents are properly taking care of his money?
I don't know. I hope so.
Those stories are so dark.
Yeah.
When you make $1 billion as a kid and then they blow it all on something crazy and you're famous but broke.
Didn't that happen with Macaulay Culkin?
Something like that did. I mean, he pulled the nose up because he still was in, acting and stuff, but he should probably be worth a lot more. But hey, now I disagree. I can't stand to watch children do things. But apparently I'm in the minority here.
I get it. There's something wondrous about, watching a child be genuinely happy, but also not making a lot of noise.
Well, I think some of it is also because it's not just views. This was income, not views. He's not the top viewed person on YouTube. But those toy companies are probably lining up to pay. It's like, get me on that channel. Let me send you everything I have, the whole toy lineup, and a duffel bag full of money.
Yeah,
please take this from me.
Well, I think one of Linus's best ever performing videos was him unboxing a toy fire truck, just because it was completely motorized and had like a motorized ladder or something. It was like the fanciest toy fire truck ever, and for whatever reason, that was in the tens of millions of hits.
Well, look at PewDiePie. It's if you can appeal to children, then that's sort of the YouTube secret, something we don't do at all.
We're going to get them as they become angsty teenagers.
So we're going to get them as they transition from their parents paying for everything to them being penniless.
And us giving them a dose of how it is in the real world.
And no advertisers being at all interested in them. Oh, that's great. Well, I don't know. Maybe some of you have managed to get past that phase and you're looking at buying a major appliance. You might want to take a second look before you buy that hot new refrigerator.
I don't think we've ever recommended. I think every time anything like this has come up, we've always said, don't buy the smart appliance.
This is ridiculous.
This family says this smart refrigerator can't be repaired yet because it's too high tech. Now, the article implied that it was because it's got the fancy screen on it and whatever. But when you read between the details, it's because this fridge uses some kind of new refrigerant that nobody has any idea how to work on.
Now, this kind of happened to my parents. They don't have anything that fancy. They just bought a Samsung refrigerator. And because they live in the hills of Eastern Kentucky, there are no qualified Samsung repairmen around there. So it broke, and they called whoever they bought it from, Lowe's or whatever, and they were like, you got to call up Samsung. So they called Samsung, and Samsung was like, yeah, there's nobody. We can't fix it, so we have to replace it. We'll call you back in 3 months. So
we're going to put it on a boat. You're going to have to pick it up at your local loading dock. And this is a landlocked state.
Luckily, Lowe's did give them a loaner fridge, a crappy fridge. And eventually they got it worked out. But like these people, it took forever to get the replacement.
Lesson learned, don't buy a Samsung fridge. In fact, don't buy something that you either can't work on yourself or is not, overly complicated.
Well, I think modern refrigerators, that's a very small list. But don't get the soup like the top of the line.
Yeah.
Get the most mass-produced model.
Yeah. Because if they had a high failure rate on fridges that a lot of people bought, they would be out of business from having to repair them.
Well, not only that, but the people who are around you are going to be able to work on them.
Yeah.
Or you could just call a repair shop and be like, hey, what would it cost to get this model fixed, even if you don't have it yet? And if they say, we can't work on that, keep looking.
Yeah. And if you want to make up the problem, just tell them that it's low on refrigerant.
So, China. We've talked about their crushing of the human spirit, their spying, and, you know, the Huawei and all of their political troubles. But here's a good story about China. Some feel-good Chinese moments.
The New York Times is like, China is going to launch this to the far side of the moon. Literally, the dark side of the moon. That's like in that one album.
Who recorded that album?
Pink Floyd.
Oh! That one was pretty easy, though. So yeah,
I almost said Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I knew that wasn't right.
No, that's very different bands. Yeah. From different parts of the world, even.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to launch a. It's going to be, I think, a third or two thirds the size of Curiosity.
Yeah.
Their rover.
It's going to drive it around.
And it's going to do some measurements. It's got like radar and stuff. Not super interesting. One of the cool things it's going to do. It's going to try to germinate potatoes and hatch some sort of insect eggs.
Hmm.
Just to see if that can happen up there.
Neat. So, well, they'll have to give it an artificial atmosphere, but that should be fine.
No, I think that it'll have an atmosphere, but the thing they're thinking about is in that gravity, can that happen?
Hmm.
So
neat.
Seems like a potato could pop out of taproot in zero gravity, right?
I would think so.
Why not?
It's not zero gravity. It's just low gravity.
Well, you know, functionally. So, yeah. Good luck with the dark side of the moon, which isn't actually dark all the time. Yeah. If you're wondering how you can germinate potatoes in darkness, it's not always dark. It's totally locked.
In before correction.
Well, this is some good news. Maybe a little terrifying, you know, because this is going to be a way that I think insurance companies are going to like demand this.
Yeah.
And it's going to be dark.
Oh, no coverage.
Dystopia.
Scientists develop a 10-minute universal cancer test. It looks for markers in your blood, but it's really accurate, apparently.
Yeah. So apparently the cancer, even if it passes through blood, leaves behind something that will or won't bond to a type of metal or something like that. So what they do is they just pull some blood. And they run it through this, and if anything sticks to it or don't, I can't remember which one it was. Do you remember which one it was? Then they know somewhere in your body, and it doesn't tell them where it is, but it tells them that somewhere in there, there are malignant cells, and they're leaving behind this slimy trail.
How bad is that going to be? It's like you go to the little pharmacy at Kroger, and it's like, oh yeah, let's just get you some cough pills, and oh yeah, let's do a saliva test or a blood test here real quick. Oh, you have cancer. It's going to take a couple of weeks for us to schedule to figure out like where the cancer is and how bad it is.
Yeah,
that'd be a terrifying couple of weeks.
Or you know, it's going to be like, hey, you know, you signed up for insurance. Here's one of those little like diabetic testing finger punch things. So, like, send us a swab back.
If that ever turns blue, you don't have insurance anymore.
So, but that is good, you know, early detection and all that. So, if you can afford it. Of course, this is where we get all those comments about, you know, socialized medicine. Well, Friday, it's going to be a big Friday because we have not done security, we've not done robots, and we've not done nonsense.
Wow, that's going to be a bumper crop Friday.
Hacked Friday.
We've already been dragging on.
I think we might have to cut some nonsense stories.
It's fine. We'll see you Friday.